You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
Therapy. It's Chris and Dave as the Packers coming off of a highly unexpected win for a lot of Packers fans. 10-3, they beat the Bears to open up the 2019 season. Dave, before I get to where I want to start, deconstructing the game, I want to say something first so I don't forget. Our boy Greg X Smith came through this week. And he threw us a couple bucks on PayPal, and I wanted to give a special thanks to Greg for that. Been a long time listener, good friend of the program. So before I forget it, in the rush of our post game breakdown and looking ahead to the Vikings game, I wanted to make sure I said that. So with that out of the way, I'd like to get your feelings about this game, because I was reading some things. In kind of, you know, now that the afterglow of the victory is past,
yeah,
and you know, people are beginning to kind of come down a little bit and say, well, yeah, that was a nice win, but what does it really mean? What does it mean in a time when the Bears didn't play any of their guys in the preseason, so this really was kind of like their first preseason game, and the Packers hadn't played anybody. It was a nice showing. The defense looked great. But does it really mean anything? What's your take?
Well, it means something that they're 1-0. At the end of the season, this is a win, and it's going to matter. And they beat an in-division foe. It's the one that won the division last year. So it on the scoreboard and on the standings, it doesn't matter what time it was, who they played before. I mean, it definitely matters. Does it mean that the Packers are a lot better team than we thought, a slightly better team than we thought? Is the Bears not as good as we thought, or a lot worse than we thought? I guess we know a little bit more than we did last week before they started playing, but until I see the Packers and the Bears play someone else, it is a little bit of a mystery, because I think the few things that we know is that the Bears' defense is good. I don't think there's any question that that's true. We knew that coming in. Do you have any debate about that you think that the Packers' offense is really bad and the Bears defense is not that great? I think the Bears defense is really good. What do you think?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The Bears defense is really good. And that's why some of the post game analysis of, oh my God, Lane Taylor has got to be benched. It wasn't just Lane Taylor. I mean, that Bears defensive front made, I think, pretty much everybody on the Packers offensive line. Even Bakhtiari was a little shaky at times. I guess Bulaga had a pretty good game, but he was the only one that was really okay. The rest of the crew, shaky. But I don't think that's because necessarily we've got problems there. I think it's more a situation where the Bears are just really good on defense. What I think concerns me more about the Packer offense is something that you sent me today, and it was a video breakdown of, you know, Aaron Rodgers not doing so well against the blitz, and you know, not going to open guys when he has them against the blitz, and that's what makes me question the Packers' offense is not so much, you know, what the Bears' defense did to them, but you know, what Aaron Rodgers was unable to do the way he used to do it.
Yeah, and well, though this is the way it's been for the last few years, right? I think that what I sent you was from Twitter. It was he got sacked in this play, but it was.
Was that Ben Fennell's breakdown? I think that was a Ben Fennell thing, right?
It was. And now he's got graphics with it. And so if you don't subscribe to Ben Fennell and maybe a few other people that show video, but he stops it and highlights the right people and shows where they're moving. It's great. But there is a play where the left side of the Bears defense was kind of overloaded and then snapped the ball. It might have been a shotgun. Rodgers gets it, and the pressure's coming to his left. He quickly looks and sees Jimmy Graham open, and he holds it. And then he looks to his right, and then he's starting to – then he dances, and he goes down. And then what you, Fennell is highlighting is not Jimmy Graham was open. Then there was also someone open in the middle of the field. You know, each of them would have been maybe a five-yard gain. You break a tackle, it could be longer. But what ended up happening was a sack, and he sat on it. And that is the other thing that I don't quite know. So I know the Bears' defense is good. The unknown is the Packers' offense, is what has changed. You know, they've let the clock run to zero a bunch of times. He's not throwing the ball quick enough. And then as we look at it in hindsight, he's not throwing open receivers short. So if that's the way we're going to play, then we're going to struggle on offense because that's how we played in the past. And I wonder what's going on with LaFleur. He must be telling him, that's your read, throw the ball. I can't imagine it's, look at that, if he's open, check two and three before you throw it back to one. I mean, against the Bears defense, that'd be ridiculous. So is this all on Rodgers or what's happening? What do you think about that?
You know, I guess my question is something that we can't answer because we're not inside of Aaron Rodgers' head. But why does he do that? You know, I mean, this, yeah, obviously when you're on the field and, you know, Khalil Mack is coming at you, you know, it's a lot harder than it is when you're, you know, breaking down video from above and you're slow motion and you can highlight different things. But Aaron Rodgers has done this for a long time, and the guy traditionally has processed information as quickly as anybody. And, you know, there were two guys available. Now, I would think that a five-yard gain is what you're speculating would have been on either one of those throws. That's better than whatever they lost in the sack.
Right.
So, you know, why not just take that if you have it, if they're giving it to you? Even if it's 5 yards, it's better than taking a sack, especially when you're, you know, running the risk of injury, you know, on top of just losing the yardage. You know, anything can happen when you get sacked. You get fallen upon and you break something, and he's done that several times.
Well, and his offensive linemen can get hurt too, right? They have to sustain. Right. Everything collapses. Someone falls and blows out Bulaga's knee. You know, if he gets that out quick, then, you know, then they all run and turn toward the receiver. So you're not only prolonging Rodgers' life, but you're prolonging your offensive lineman too.
Yeah, it's really puzzling. I don't want to accept the fact that Rodgers is gun shy. He's not decisive any longer, or they can't process information any longer, or that he's so afraid of the turnover that it is forcing him, you know, to take sacks, or like last year, throw the ball away repeatedly. That just it just doesn't seem like the player that he was. And I guess I'm not ready to say that he's in his, you know, in his dotage. I guess I'm not ready to go there at this point. But maybe that's ignoring some of the facts. And now I know this is maybe overreaction because they played a really good defense in the Bears. But, you know, there were plays there to be made, and you're not making them, and you're not gonna get a defensive performance from your team, and you're not gonna face a guy like Mitch Trubisky every week. So you're gonna have to take advantage of those things against some of these other teams. You know, starting with the Vikings this week.
Well, that's the other thing. So the thing I think I know, so the second thing I know the Bears defense is good. I think the second thing I know is that the Green Bay defense is better than they've been in a long time. The question is, how good are they? Could they be actually as good as the Bears or some of these really good defenses? Because they have all the qualities that I saw. They could put pressure with four. Their linebackers were fast, and they made sure tackles. And their safety and corner play was fantastic. I thought every pass was contested. No one that I can remember really ran wide open, or it seemed like there was a corner on someone at every time. In between Alexander and Brown and King, I thought they just played terrific. So now I got the sense as the game was going along, like, you know, we're giving up some yardage, and you know, this isn't a great defense, but they look really good right now. It looks real solid. And then it sort of dawned on me somewhere in the third quarter, like, wow, we're actually playing really good. especially, you know, the Smith brothers. And I thought Amos has made a few good plays, not just the interception. I'm really, really curious to see if they're an elite defense. I guess we'll find out against Minnesota. I hope so. And it seems like they're faster and confident. And I love the way they're pressuring the quarterback. You know, compared to Perry and even with Matthews, it seems so different right now. Now I kind of understand why they got rid of Mike Daniels, too, because it seems like they can do stunts and move people around and use speed a little bit rather than Daniels, who's kind of more of a power guy up the middle. I am very excited about the Packers defense. That's what everyone's been talking about all week, is because, I mean, they limited the Bears to 3 points. Regardless of who was playing quarterback for the Bears, I think the Packers defense looked really good.
Yeah, I think it did too. I'm not certain at this point if they are going to be a defense like that, you know, week in and week out, because you know there's going to be injuries, and that is going to be a real test. See if they have the depth to back it up. But they are literally a different defense because the personnel, what, 7 of the 11 starters were different. So I think the way they're playing, they have players that do different things that allows them to play a different way. So I'm encouraged, but I'm not sure I'm buying it because, you know, they were helped out by several, you know, poor Trubisky passes, some bad decisions. He's not a finished product yet. I'm not sure if he ever will be, but, you know, he's at this point in his evolution, you know, he's not ready to put a team on his back and lead him to victory. That's not to say the Packer defense wasn't better and won't, you know, maybe be a top 10 defense this year. I just don't know if we can really trust it based on what we saw this past week. This week coming up, I think, is going to be a really good test because it looks like the Vikings are kind of a throwback offense, at least at this point. Did you see they only threw 10 passes in their game this past Sunday, and they ran the ball, you know, like it was the Miami Dolphins from 1972, you know, yeah. Or like the Wisconsin Badgers in the 1990s, you know, where with very efficient when they passed, but only passed the ball 10 times. So that's going to be a real test to see if this defense, which I think is probably more set up to stop passing games, to see how they're going to be if they're going to face a team that's going to run the ball 60% of the time.
Yeah, I wonder how that's going to play itself out. I thought when I watched a little bit of the game against Minnesota, Atlanta's defense is built for speed as well, kind of lighter pass rushing guys, and so they just ran it down our throats. I don't think they're going to have clearly as much success against the Packers, so they're going to have to throw the ball more. But we'll see. I mean, when I saw the Minnesota score, I thought, uh-oh, maybe Minnesota's going to be really good. But I guess they had a block punt, a fumble, a couple of interceptions. So Atlanta, I guess, gave some up. And then I saw another statistic that said that in grading out the offensive lines, that Minnesota was last by far. And I can't quote where I saw that from. And the fact that they...
Is that a Pro Football Focus thing?
It might have been. I thought, you know, if you ran for that many yards, how could the offensive line grade so poorly? But maybe it was purely the pass rush or the pass protection was graded poorly. If that's true, you know, if the Packers could get a 10-point lead on Minnesota or say, you know, larger, just I can imagine that we can attack Cousins and really go after him. So, you know, we just got to play better offense. And I think to start here, the dink and dunk down the field and then take your shots once in a while, I don't understand why we can't make that happen again. And against the Bears, we ran not very successfully, but wasn't terrible. I thought Aaron Jones made some plays when a lot was there. And then we had some long passes, but we never threw short hardly much at all. I think we're going to have to do that against Minnesota.
I think they're going to have to do that against all the teams coming up. I really think that this offense is going to be rhythm based, and that's not just, you know, you get the ball 1, 2, 3 and get the ball out. I think that means it will run better when you kind of stack successes on top of each other.
Yeah.
The one touchdown drive they had was, you know, everything was clicking. There was a lot of successes piled on top of the one big gain, and then, you know, it was completion, touchdown. And I think you need to get in that sort of positive rhythm. Because this is just massaging the biases that I've, talked about here for years on this podcast. I think we both agree that the offense just runs better, even if you're gaining 5 yards or 7 yards, but you're consistently gaining that, and you get that momentum going, and you get the defense back on its heels, and you get that nice sinus rhythm going, nice heartbeat kind of chopping up down the field. I think that that's better than, trying to seek out those 25-yard plays, because then it's, it's incompletion, sack, 25 yards, and then it's a run for two, and then you try again for 17, and it just, yeah. That's kind of that fits and starts thing. I know those are chunk plays. I know those are important, but the offense never feels like it's in rhythm when you do that kind of thing. I would rather see, a pass for seven, a run for four, a pass for six, that kind of consistent movement, and I think that would help everybody kind of find their flow. And at this point, I mean, against the Bears, hard to say, but I don't think we saw that.
No, I just don't understand why we can't make it happen. I felt McCarthy wanted that to happen, but it seemed like Rodgers was just not interested in running that. But LaFleur came in, I thought that was his offense, and I didn't see much of that either. But again, it's against a really good defensive Bear. I mean, Khalil Mack is really a monster. I mean, I don't know if I've seen a player like him since Reggie White take put pressure on the quarterback. He's really, really good. But the other thing too, Chris, that is my nomination for the Surly Award, named after our buddy Nick.
Yes.
You ready to announce yours?
Because he's our chief technology officer. For people that don't know, he's the guy who takes the raw, I don't want to say footage because it's a digital product. Anyway, he takes it and makes it coherent. And that is a big job when it comes to Packers therapy.
Yeah, it really does.
Huge, huge job.
Everything that I've said, I've slurred everything, and he is able to work the audio. It's that they run the clock down to zero consistently. Yeah. I mentioned it before. But I tell you, that makes me so angry. It gives the defense sort of the green light when to rush. I don't know how much information you're giving. I get maybe having it run down to zero a few times when you want to read the defense, but sometimes I would think they're good switch last second, then hike it on with 10 seconds left before they've even switched. I would think the moving it around would make more sense. And someone made the point, I don't know if it was Ryan Wood from the, I don't know if he's the Journal Sentinel said, you're going to have to snap the ball at various times so that Minnesota doesn't get off the ball as quick. And I thought, yeah, that makes sense. That they did it again. They had a few delay of penalties, delay of game penalties, as did the Bears, which there's an interesting that we took the yardage for the first time with one of the delay games, which was really important. But the fact that they still run it down to that, it can't be the offensive system. That's got to be Rodgers, right?
I would think so. But, he didn't play in the preseason. And I think we should keep in mind that this offense is a work in progress, because really the first time that first unit was out there for real, was the first series of the regular season. So we talked during, the dreadful preseason that we're probably not going to know a lot about the offense until they get at least three games, maybe four games under their belt, because they're kind of figuring out the new scheme.
I'd almost be tempted, if I was LaFleur and we had another game like this, is I know there's been all this talk about audibles and what is LaFleur say, able to decide, what can Rodgers decide? It's almost say, I'm taking away from you. Here is the play. You run that and you snap it quickly. I don't want you looking at the defense. I don't want you, change. I just do it and get the ball snapped somewhere between, 15 and 10 seconds left. Even though I know there could be some plays where you run right into the teeth of the defense, I just feel like his indecision, his sort of wanting to look around the and then after the snap, him sort of surveying the field, that all that delay stuff is just hurting our offense. And I feel like we're being super negative on a victory because I did not see this coming. I was watching this game with a Bear fan, and I just assumed we were going to lose. And after the first two offensive series, I thought it's going to be an embarrassment. All we're going to hear about is how LaFleur's offense was the worst start ever. And then I was on cloud nine at the end of the game.
Oh, yeah.
But I did get mad after the game watching some of these highlights or the breakdowns of the offense, because it's like, please don't do this anymore.
Well, you know, minus 12 yards in the first quarter is not going to leave a good taste in the mouth of a lot of Packer fans. I know it didn't make me feel good, but this was like watching the Wisconsin Badgers a couple of years ago, where you were kind of excited when the defense was on the field because they were so impressive. And, you know, the offense is whatever. Just put the defense back out there and watch them, you know, go to town. And this was very exciting. And that's why I would reject the argument that this was an ugly game and it wasn't entertaining, all that kind of crap that we were getting from especially some of the national people. I thought it was a great game to watch because actually both defenses, you know, were really good. And that is a very important part of football. It's not just about scoring points in offense. It's what you can do defensively. It's one thing if you have incompetent offense and they're fumbling and you know, they're making mistakes and the defenses aren't good. It's just that the offenses are bad. I think this was a case where the defenses were probably forcing a lot of the lack of offensive fireworks because they were just as good as they were. So, yeah, I feel good, but I just don't know if I want to get excited about this team because it was their first game. They hadn't played. It was the Bears' first game. They hadn't played. We're going to learn a lot more this week coming up and probably this first month because they're going to be at home. They're going to have some good opponents, and I don't want to make any judgments about them until I've really seen at least three games.
Well, I'd love to see them be dominant at home. You know, they're more comfortable. You know, the offense is moving. And then, you know, I can't wait for this team to get a 14-point lead in the second quarter and let Pettin let the dogs loose on these quarterbacks. I think they could be really, really great. I saw Brian Bulaga. He stayed healthy, so he's now hit the over. and I thought Kevin King, you know, I realized they might not play him all the time, so they might be able to have him last for a while too, because I thought Tony Brown played pretty well. I thought Tremont Williams, other than that late hit, which was really dumb, but I thought he played well.
You know, he was making contact with him before the guy was out of bounds. It was he followed through was the deal.
Yeah, he should have let go. Yeah,
I will give him absolution. I know there were three penalties. I will give him absolution to some extent because the play he made along the sidelines. Waiting until the second the guy touches the ball to push him out of bounds and, you know, cause an incompletion. That was veteran savvy right there.
That was great.
It also came at a big time in the game.
And, you know, watching Darnell Savage play compared to the safeties we've had in the last few years, and Amos as well. You know, there's one of the plays of the game I thought that went unnoticed. There was on one of the fourth and short, Trubisky, I think he did a run pass option. And then he stepped to his left, and he was going to throw to the tight end. And Amos saw that coming and ran right to the tight end and covered him. Trubisky held on to it, and then he got sacked he got tripped up, and then that was a fourth down play, and then we got the ball. And I thought that was a really smart, important play. I thought, you know, we're not even close to that. So even Amos's interception I thought was great, but I thought that play was very, very strong. And then today I saw another video of Darnell Savage running toward the quarterback as he was scrambling, I guess, to his left. And Savage was flying down the field. I mean, everyone else looked like they were sort of stuck in mud. And he got to Trubisky quick and knocked him out of bounds. I thought, wow, that we have legitimate safeties that might be really, really good. Knock on wood, please no injuries. I don't want to have to dig into them. I want to see these guys play together for a while. But I was really impressed with the secondary. I mean, Alexander played great. I'm really excited to see how this team's going to play against Minnesota.
Yeah, I am too, especially because Minnesota's going to run the ball a lot, apparently. I was reading some things this week that the reason they made the adjustment they did in Minnesota by canning their offensive coordinator was because, you know, head coach wanted to run the ball more. And now they got a guy in there who's, you know, committed, I mean, really committed to the run, and it's been effective. And if that's the kind of team that they're going to be, I'm not sure the Packers are necessarily equipped. Now they don't have Mike Daniels, who is a tremendous run stuffer. You know, I'm not sure that the Packers are as equipped as they were in the past to stop the run. Now, that being said, Kenny Clark is a man.
Yeah,
there really is no doubt. That's a guy that they're going to have to re-sign sooner rather than later. That was a really good first-round pick. You know, props. I think that was one of Ted's picks. So, well done. He's a difference maker. But I wonder, though, and I hate to say this because you mentioned the safeties, how thin are they, though? I mean, if Savage, you know, would get injured, or if you know, King gets hurt like he so often does, do they have guys behind those guys, you know, that can fill in? Or are they paper thin where you're going to lose one of those players and, you know, it's going to be the leak in the dam that's going to cause the flood? They escaped this past time around without any injuries the way it sounds. But it's the NFL. You know, there's going to be, hopefully not a lot, but there's going to be several, and there'll probably be at least a couple to key players. I'm not sure they have the depth to be as good as they were this past game or to keep the thing going. Obviously, reserves are not going to be as good as the starters, but can they play well enough that there won't be a dramatic drop off? So we'll have to wait and see on that. I really don't know at this point because there's so many new faces, and it seems like the scheme maybe even has evolved a little bit on defense, or at least the style of what they want to do has evolved a little bit. So I'm cautiously optimistic is the way that I'll put it. I like what I saw. I just have a lot of questions about quality of the opponent and whether or not they can be this good in weeks going forward when attrition and injury starts to come into play.
Now, what did you think about the fact they took the penalty on the delay of game? They kept that timeout so then they could challenge what was an awful call. I mean, we shouldn't have to challenge a call like that where, I mean, he got 1 foot in bounds and then he was way out of bounds. Was that Taylor Gabriel that we challenged, won that challenge?
But right.
Had we called timeout, we would not been able to. And the whole game might have been different then.
I was thinking about that. That is a really great example of where they either got, you know, lucky or they had a really good foresight. I'm not really sure, you know, what it was, but that could easily have gone the other way. There was a number of ways, you know, that the game could have gone differently. So I'm delighted they did it the way they did it, but you're talking about those couple of plays every game that come into play in such a way that the game could turn. Yeah. And that was one that turned in their favor, but it so easily could have been the other way. They had no timeouts. They would not have been able to take that challenge. So, yeah, okay, great. You know, we're happy about it. You get a win on the road against your arch rival. Like you said, a win in, you know, week one counts as much as it does in week, you know, 12. So take it, move on, say thank you, and, you know, see what you got again the following week.
You know, I'll give you another one. The offensive pass interference that LaFleur challenged, to me it looked like that was a dumb move. I don't know what they saw. It seemed like people on the sidelines were yelling it out, so does he get caught up in the moment? It got bad information. But then later on, they called pass interference on the Bears, and I thought, I wonder if by I'm sure that wasn't his plan, but by challenging it, I wonder they put the refs on a little bit on alert and got the call, because that was a really big call too. I think that was a big play, and they said that I think it was Gabriel again that pushed off. It felt like, you know, whether even a good challenge or a bad challenge, even the bad challenge came out in our favor if that influenced the second call. I thought that was something as well. Did you think about that?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of coming down on the fact that, and I didn't watch a lot of the other games this past weekend, but I'm guessing that LaFleur and the coaches around the league are really kind of testing to see what kind of plays are going to be overturned in this new, you know, if pass interference is not called, you know, challenge situation. I don't think people really know the extent to which they're going to be given that. So I chalk that up not so much as, you know, oh yeah, they definitely believed that was, you know, pass interference, but they wanted to see how that would be interpreted in replay. So I was okay with it because I think they were trying to figure things out, and I think they will be for a few weeks until people get a sense of they're not going to let you get away with that. Don't bother with it.
Yeah. Another thing I noticed, the stop on, I don't know, it's third down or fourth down that Cordell Patterson had on a rushing play.
Oh, yeah.
You know, last year against the Patriots, he just killed us. And it's kind of like a microcosm of how this year is different than last year, that he had that short yardage play and just got
stuffed.
And
they got him in the backfield, yeah. I
mean, that, it felt so satisfying.
Amos in on that, and Clark, I think that was. I mean, that was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it really was.
Especially against that guy. I think going back to his days with the Vikings, you know, he had really killed the Packers.
Yeah, and maybe this is different. And I would be remiss to ask you this question. On Sunday, my good friend Bill Mahler asked me a question. He watched the Packer game, and he said, I think he was testing my Packer knowledge, and little did he know how much Packer knowledge I have. He asked me who I thought the MVP of the game was. So who would you think is the MVP, or someone who really sees through the game, who would say is the MVP of the game?
J.K. Scott.
Yeah, that's what I said too.
Hey, that guy was freaking awesome. Now, I will admit, you know, when they drafted him in the fifth round last year, I thought, well, you know, okay.
Let him finish high school at least.
Yeah, well, or at least start to shave anyway, you know. And I thought he was okay last year. J.K. was okay. All right, you know. Yep. But a fifth round draft choice, I mean, it's not a third round draft choice, but still, you know, I don't know if he was really worth it. But we saw in the preseason that, you know, he looked like he was, you know, really taking a step up with the height of the kicks, the length of the kicks. But in this first game, now the conditions were terrific. You know, early September, it's going to be great. And, you know, my son kept telling me, yeah, well, let's see what he's doing in December at Lambeau, you know. But he was – well, in fact, both punters, I think, had a good night. But especially Scott. I mean, the places he was you know, pinning the ball when they needed it to be a long kick, he was able to reverse the field. There were a lot of height on the kick. I mean, all the way around, he was just doing everything that needed to be done. And maybe in a 10-3 game, you're going to look at the specialists. And, boy, he was a special specialist.
He sure was. I sent you a tweet that talked about the Bears starting position on the field. Do you have that handy? I can't. Oh, here it is. So, I mean, early on, they started. So this is the Bears where they started. So they started on their own 43 because we went negative yards. We went negative again. They got the ball at the Green Bay 36. That's when they kicked the field goal. But then after that, they got it at their own. I'll just list off this off. This is all in their territory. They're 4, they're 25, they're 11, they're 15, they're 25, the 10, the 23, the 13, the 25, and the 14. You know, nothing beyond out past their 30. He kicked it, you know, downed it, unless I'm missing a, when was a 63-yard punt? He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 kicks within the 20. That's a defensive weapon.
It's absolutely.
Absolutely a great game for him. I think he did get a game ball or something like that, I thought, in the locker room. He certainly deserved it. That is a sign of a good team when your special teams are good as well.
Well, no less authority than Leroy Butler was saying, you know, as a defensive player, that is a big help to the defense, what J.K. Scott did. I know Aaron Nagler, after the game, gave J.K. Scott one of his game balls. So a lot of people noticed it, and it was great. I liked it. If we played every game, you know, in, I don't know what the temperature was, or 65 degrees, you know, without a lot of wind. I mean, if we did that every week throughout the season, yeah, I would feel a lot better. But, you know, the weather's not going to be that way. It's going to be windy. The ball's going to be like a rocket toward the end of the season. So, yes, enjoy it. Check it off. And let's see what he does when the conditions get crappy.
Well, you got to at least be able to do it when the weather's good. So you're right, it might not be as good. But, you know, if he's in a dome and it's good weather for at least a month or so, I like it that he can show up. And we needed it in this game. Field position was huge in this game.
Yep. Well, in defensive games, I think that's always going to be the case. You know, field position is going to be critical. Now, I'm wondering, maybe this is going to be their team this year. They're going to have a solid defense. They're going to have an offense that is, you know, going to be finding its way. Well, if that is the case, then you're going to have your specialists, both your punter and your field goal kicker field goal, are going to have to be, because you're going to wind up not scoring as many touchdowns. You're going to have to hit all your field goals, and your punter's going to have to reverse the field and prevent long returns. And right now it seems as though he's going to be able to do that. But let's see. By the way, did you see some of the slow motion, the leg extension that he gets? I mean, how can you do that without dislocating your hip? I mean, it's like the Rockettes were impressed with the amount of kick he was getting, you know?
Yeah, wow. It was cool to see him get some TV time, but that was ridiculous. I can't touch my toes. So that something like that feels like a complete freak. But I think that's what we saw, right? He's a one step, but his foot gets so high that he can just boom the ball. It's pretty cool. I guess, and the other maybe game ball should be given to is Brian Gutekunst. What a great game he had. His free agent signings all did well. I don't know how Billy Turner did necessarily, but again, that was against the Bears. But yeah, you know, signing the punt, you know, drafting the punter as soon as he did. Jair Alexander's having a great game. Rashawn Gary was interesting. I guess everyone kept
half a dozen plays, right?
Yeah, and I thought I saw a few highlights of those plays, and it wasn't Nick Perry, you know, just dancing around with the lineman. I mean, he's quick, and he didn't get a sack, but I thought he got some pressure on the quarterback when he played. So I don't think that he looked that there. You know, there's some hope for him too.
Yeah, I'm not certain yet about that. He didn't jump off the screen in the preseason when it was just kind of athletes running around. I expected him to be one of those guys who would, you know, do really well in the preseason when no one's scheming and it was just, you know, who's the best athlete out there. I didn't see that, and so I'm wondering now when the varsity is playing, you know, is he going to be any kind of a difference maker? And I'm dubious. I mean, the guy's got all the measurables that you want, which is great. However, he didn't make any plays at Michigan, so let's just wait and see on this. He definitely looks like Tarzan. I'm hoping he doesn't play like Jane.
Yeah, I guess I'm not ready to say, you know, he's a bust or he's great.
No, but people
said he was invisible in this game. And I actually thought that the few plays that I saw that he actually was getting some pressure. He wasn't, you know, but there was nothing that I can recall from memory in the game. You know, they never highlighted him. In fact, I never even noticed his number.
Right, yeah. But it wasn't until the highlights, yeah.
But, you know, it's because I'm watching the two Smiths and Kenny Clark. You know, Trubisky got rid of the ball pretty quick, but then, you know, we were right on it. So I think a team that, you know, may have a quarterback. You know, I don't know how Cousins plays. I don't remember if he holds the ball, but if he does, we get a bunch of sacks on him.
Well, it sounds like he holds it long enough to hand it off the way it sounds.
Well, yeah. Maybe that's if that's their best strategy, go for it.
But well, good for him. I mean, he's making $30 million a year, right? So
yeah,
I mean, that's if all you got to do is pass it 10 times, sounds good to me.
I suppose. You know? Yeah, it's only EQ has a better deal this year. Just sit out. Should we take a break real quick?
Yeah, I think we will, and we've got some email to get to. I think quite a few, actually, and maybe we'll do that after the break. We do want to give you a chance to be like Greg Smith, Greg X Smith. That's right, and hit the PayPal account, PackersTherapy@yahoo.com. Send Chris and Dave some money. I mean, really? Why not? Do it now, because as the year goes on, you know, we're going to be getting into the holiday season, and you'll want to be saving that money for your Packers Therapy memorabilia or trip to one of our hotels and casinos. So right now, though, you've got the disposable money. You know, the paycheck may be coming in this week. Go to PayPal and PackersTherapy@yahoo.com. If you like the podcast, give a little bit. If you don't like the podcast, give a lot more. That's what I say.
That's right.
All right, so we're going to take a little bit of a break here. Mike glasses without iced tea, so it needs to be filled up. And we're going to come back, talk a little email, do some betting lines. Maybe we'll do a little pop culture. We'll have more with Chris and Dave and Packers Therapy just a sec. And a moment has passed, and Packers Therapy with Chris and Dave back again. You know, Dave, I want to open the kimono here for just a second and allow our listeners to understand what happens during these momentary breaks that we take as part of our ritual. I don't even know if we have to do it anymore because, you know, we have our man Nick on the case, and he probably could, you know, make this thing, you know, beautiful. But anyway, we do take these breaks. When I have iced tea, now what I do is I go for the Pure Leaf iced tea in the bottles. You've probably seen this, right?
Yeah.
What I do is I take three of the unsweetened, and I mix it together with one bottle of the lemon flavored. So that way you get just a little sweetness, not a lot, just a little sweetness. Like, you know, they did play the Bears this past week, so it's like Walter Payton, just a little sweetness.
Well, how big is your cup, by the way?
Well, you know, I'm not drinking that entire mixture. I put it in a big, and then I take it one glass at a time. But that was a good question to ask, though.
Yeah.
It was very analytical, and I'm quite proud of you. So we mentioned Nick Searle, who is the chief technology officer of Packers Therapy Creations, Inc., LTD, I'm sorry. And I did not give my Searle Award, but I think there's only one really candidate for my Searle Award. And that's the post-game hosts on the Score in Chicago. Yeah. Big Snake Man sent me a 15-minute clip of of the post-game. It is, if you can go back and find that, the raw, unvarnished angst and anger about the head coach, about the quarterback, all the usual suspects. You know, this is not a program for delving down and having perspective. No, they go right at the usual suspects and they let him. This would be the equivalent, Dave, of if this was like a Make-A-Wish kid, you know, who, you know, wanted to, I don't know, go fly on an F-16, you know, and, you know, got there and he got in the cockpit. Oh, I'm sorry, we're out of gas, you know, and the way the family would feel betrayed and let down. That's the way the guys on the Score post game show. Searle doesn't begin to describe the amount of anger, especially when it's the Packers.
Yeah,
because you know these guys have history with the Packers.
Of course.
And it is a thing of beauty.
We talked about last week is that it kind of all the pressure's on the Bears. They just missed a deep run in the playoffs by the double doink, and all off season they're trying out kickers, and their bars are doing kickers, and you know they're making a big deal of it. But then they kind of come out of it, and they're talking about Trubisky being an MVP candidate.
Oh man!
And
oh.
You know it's Super Bowl or bust, and some of the people that are in Chicago said you just had never seen so many Bear jerseys. And then they come out. I mean, fart in the wind is probably a generous way to describe what they had. But do you still have that 15-minute clip? Because I would love to listen to it.
Yeah, I think I do. Mike sent that to me the day after, so I'd have to go back and find that. But I do want you to enjoy it. I probably should have sent it to you right away.
Yeah.
But it was – I mean, the whole show, you can listen to the whole show, but really what you want to hear is when they come out and just the anger and the vitriol. It is just it's a special moment for Packer fans, you know?
Yep. I did listen to the Score 670, but I think I fell asleep, you know, as they're whining and crying. But I'd love to hear what you've got. You know, and to think that the fans went from just absolute the highest expectations, so excited for the game, and they were booing by the third quarter. They turned quickly.
Well, but that's what expectations are, premeditated resentments. Don't ever forget that.
I'll write that down.
Well, I saw that on Twitter. Joseph Arthur, the musician, he put that on Twitter a number of years ago, and I have been using it for a long time.
Oh, that's
because
good.
It is absolutely so perfect. Ooh, oh. I have Twitter open, and I just saw that Christian Yelich suffers a fractured kneecap.
Oh, no. You've got to be kidding me.
Oh, boy. Oh, well, sorry, Packer fans. We're talking Brewers baseball here, and it sounds like their season just ended tonight.
Yeah.
In Miami. Oh, boy. That's bad. Oh, well.
Now more pressure on the Packers.
This is all the more reason, people who are Brewer fans and Packer fans, now's the time to really appreciate the Packers because their arrow is decidedly pointing up. The arrow for the Milwaukee Brewers appears to be pointing decidedly down.
Went through Yelich's knee.
Fractured kneecap.
Do you need your kneecap to play baseball?
I know you need it for being a Catholic. You have to have the the knees in good shape for that.
I'm glad you chose that as your example.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I was at a service today, so yeah. Let me see. What are we? Oh, yes. Emails. Detective Sergeant Chief Inspector Superintendent Andy Mundy was in touch with us, and he had a number of observations, but the one he zeroed in on, Andy, presumably writing from his mail truck in central Kansas, when the Packers beat the Bills last year, it was a shutout. Aaron Rodgers had a lot of criticism for McCarthy's offense. I think they won that game, 22-0 or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was quick to praise the defense. After this first game of the year, the 10-3 win against the Bears, Rodgers criticized his own play and gushed over the defensive performance. Andy finds this to be an interesting change in the quarterback's demeanor, one that we should not ignore. I believe this shutdown defense performance is likely to continue at a relatively high level while the offense will get better since Rodgers believes it will. And he says he's very excited. I don't know if I'd like to believe that, Andy, and Dave. I'd like to believe that. I'm going to have to see more of what this offense is capable of doing against another good defense coming up this week. But also, I just want to see if I can really believe what I saw from this defense.
Yeah, you know, Detective Andy brings up a really good point. I forgot to talk about that. He's right, that comparison of when the defense played well that time, he was surly, right? He was not happy in his postgame. And then here, he could not look happier. And his phrase of just, we have a defense, you know, we have a defense. I think that is meaningful, or there's something up behind that he's been playing against this defense in the preseason or, you know, in practice for a long time. He must see, you know, they've met expectations of maybe what he saw. And, you know, he's right. All the postgame stuff, whether the interview right after or during his press conference, you know, I guess the only thing he said about the offense is I'll play better. I think that's a really good point that you can take some comfort that maybe they're on the same page. I love the fact that the head coach and the coordinators are on the field. Doesn't it just seem like they're together? Literally they're together more. But, you know, when they're talking on headphones, you don't get the sense of that they're strategizing together to make this thing happen. When they're standing there, I think the offensive coordinator was there too, right? Was the – whose name escapes me. I thought he's also there.
Hackett,
yeah. So, and then you've got Pettin, you know, having Rodgers come up and push Pettin as he's real excited. I just feel like having them there on the field, that you can get the feel of the game. I suppose you lose some top-down perspective, but I hope that's what those Microsoft Surface things are for. the whole thing just sort of feels better for me, and every time they show LaFleur, it's like, you know, yeah, he's a handsome dude, I can still get behind that. Just the whole thing sort of feels better, and I was encouraged to hear Rodgers be optimistic rather than kind of down on the defense, on the offense, and, you know, taking sort of side swipes at LaFleur. I thought his optimism makes me excited.
To recap, Matt LaFleur is a handsome man that you can get behind. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that correctly.
Exactly. You summed it up perfect.
Okay, so you mentioned Microsoft, so of course I thought Apple immediately, and that's iChuck, who is in the City of Light. He's in Gay Paris. Presumably that's where Dave gets behind Matt LaFleur. So anyway, he is happy to see the coordinators on the sidelines as well. He called that thing a love shove, which, okay, that's good. And if you invent the iPhone, you can call it a love shove. That's perfectly fine with me. And he was wondering if it's a new change this season. And yes, it is. They've been doing it since the practice games started. He likes seeing the coordinators on the sideline. You do too, the way it sounds. I'm indifferent. I think, it's probably fine to have him there. I'm just not sure that, this isn't like the 1930s and come on, boys, let's go win one for the Gepper. You know, I don't think
it might kind of, it might help.
I think that's bullshit because I also think that you can get, your other coaches to rally the troops as necessary. But I'm suspecting that the rah-rah stuff has limited effect in the NFL. And if your coordinators are your most cerebral, smartest, strategically sound guys, they probably have a better view of what's going on from the press box. But if it, if it sends some kind of message to the players and the players like it and you think it has a good effect, all right, fine. I think it's okay. I don't think that it's some kind of magic bullet, though.
Well, for the offensive coordinator, he gets on the phone with the quarterback. I'm sure he's always in the ear of the head coach, as is the defensive coordinator. But how does the defense get talked to? And maybe we should just always, what do the Patriots do and just do what they do? Don't they have their offensive and defensive coordinator on the sideline? And you see them sort of huddling around with the defense or the linebackers, or you see Belichick sitting down with the offensive lineman. I'm sure it's not rah-rah, but it might be like, hey, this is what we're going to do. I mean, what happened with Dom Capers? Did he call down to his linebacker coach and said, go talk to the linebackers and tell them they got to do this or that? Doesn't that seem less efficient than getting everyone together and just making it happen right there on the sideline?
Perhaps. I think that the key thing in the NFL is to realize what your particular group of guys needs. And that's going to depend on the kind of team that you've put together and, the way that you've kind of created a culture. And if they're trying to get performance out of guys in a more motivational kind of way, then maybe you want to have the coordinators there. But a lot of teams don't do it that way. For the very reasons that we had talked about before, the coordinators are up there as strategic guys, and they're not necessarily there to be a rah-rah. Now, from what I understand about Patton, is that he is the kind of guy to be kind of a shouter and a yeller and a rah-rah sort of guy, where that wasn't Dom's thing. So maybe that is a good deployment of him because that's one of his skill sets. Not that he doesn't have the strategic parts of it, but that because of his personality, he's going to be able to get more out of guys by looking them in the eyes and grabbing them by the jersey if necessary and doing all that. I don't know what the Patriots do. Well, I do know what the Patriots do. They sign guys like Antonio Brown, who gets accused of triple sexual assault on the day after he gets signed by the Patriots.
Something. Yeah.
That's what the Patriots do. Somehow, this is going to come out great for them. It always does, even when they have a tight end that, kills people, literally kills people. I mean, that came out well for them too. Aaron Hernandez, not so good. Patriots, absolutely great. So I don't know if I want to do things the Patriots way. Thank you.
Well, all right. So that wasn't the direction I was thinking of, but I wouldn't mind the number of Super Bowls they have, and I wouldn't mind cheating a little bit like they do too. So just win, baby. That's
Yeah, and that's you, Dave. That is you all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's just no discernible morals of this guy at all.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So what else we got here? Chris Raleigh, recently located from Southern California to Valley of the Sun, living in Scottsdale, living the good life, I think, in Scottsdale.
A lot of brown tones there.
A lot of brown.
Yeah.
A lot of rock, too.
Yeah.
A lot of rock. Yeah, lots of rock there. Needless to say, it's the kind of place, if you haven't been there and you go there between April and October, you got to get one of those tinfoil things to put in the windows of your car, because otherwise you ain't driving that thing in the middle of the day. Let's just be clear about that, you know. So anyway, Chris says, what a football game. The three big signings contribute a sack for the Smith boys, interception for Amos. He was happy not to have Ha-Ha back there. Now, Ha-Ha did, force a fumble, so he did make his presence felt. Rodgers did recover it, though. Anyway, the offense is going to take some time, and I agree with that, Chris. I don't see how Lane Taylor keeps his starting spot. I do, because they're playing a tremendous defense, and all three of the interior guys struggle at times. He said the toss right and toss left plays still don't work for Green Bay. And again, I think that may have something to do with the competition. He thought we'd see more of Jake Kumerow, and we did not see anything that I could think of. Yeah. So
and we had three targets to Mercedes Lewis, your guy that you panned last week as being worthless.
Yeah, he was a cipher. Well, I think they decided that they want to get him involved in the offense. They targeted him three times in the game. He was targeted three times all of last year.
Tanya got a catch. Jimmy Graham even. You know what? That was another thing I wanted to bring up.
Jimmy Graham had a touchdown, and he had a couple of catches where he ran after the catch.
And how did you like the jump ball that Aaron Rodgers threw? I thought that was, for a guy that doesn't want to throw interceptions, that did not look open to me, but I thought this is what they're going to do more last year, is throw it up there for him to go up and grab it. And it worked. It worked. So a little bit difference there.
This is the way I saw it. Now, Jimmy Graham is, I think he's 6'7", as I recall.
Yeah.
This reminded me of the 1978 Wisconsin High School Football Championship. My alma mater, Stevens Point, I'd already graduated from high school at this time, but they were playing in the state championship, and I was only a year or two out of high school, so I went to the game playing against Madison West. Madison West had a guy named Tim Straka playing for them. Hmm. Now, I don't know if you remember Tim Straka. He went from Madison West. He played at UW for 4 years, then 9 years for the Bengals, okay, tight end. And my best friend growing up was a guy who my height, okay? He's 5'6", okay? But a hell of a player, good kick returner, good receiver. But on defense, you know, he had to cover Straka, and Straka covered him when the roles were reversed. And my buddy had a good game that game. Straka caught a couple of touchdowns, and he had an interception late in the game, and it reminded me so much of this play in the end zone with Jimmy Graham. Straka's 6'5". My friend is 5'6". And he just jumped over the top. My buddy ran a curl in. He was waiting for the ball, and, you know, Straka just jumped right over the top of him, took the ball away. It was a man among boys kind of situation. And I think that's what Jimmy Graham did. I think Rodgers recognized that he had, you know, 7 or 8 inches, and why not just throw it up there and let Jimmy make a play? And that's why you have a guy that size, and it worked out perfectly.
It did. I'm just surprised it didn't happen more last year. And I know Rodgers doesn't like to throw the ball into traffic unless it's a back shoulder, you know, kind of thing that it'd be out of bounds. It's, you know, in the middle of the field. And I felt like there was other traffic around him, but hey, it worked out well, and wouldn't be mind having a renaissance of Jimmy Graham this year as being a contributor. That'd be fantastic.
Well, I thought all the tight ends were, you know, got themselves in the game, and, you know, maybe this is an offense that's going to run more plays that are going to feature the tight end. I think that they have 5 catches as from the tight ends.
Well, 3 from Graham, Tanyan, and 6, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, can you think a lot of games in recent memory? I mean, since JerMichael Finley, where they've had 6 catches by a tight end in the game. I mean, it's pretty unusual in recent years. Let's see if they continue to do that, or maybe that was just what they gave them, you know, on certain plays. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was encouraging. Anyway, Chris goes on to write that Rodgers' mechanics fundamentals are still off. Still throws off his back foot, and they did show a lot of that in the game. That Rodgers, this isn't how you would teach somebody how to, you know, do their footwork in the NFL. But the guy's done it this way for a long time. He's always done it that way. Excuse me. And he's always had a lot of success with it. So I don't want to be too critical of the footwork because that's his game. That's who he is. That's how he rolls. Maybe as he's gotten older, maybe he needs better footwork to be more effective. But I don't know if he's going to be in a position of being able to change at this point. And the point that Chris makes is that the deep ball to MVS should have been a touchdown. And it was thrown to an open space, but MVS had to slow down and come back for it. If the ball is thrown where MVS can, you know, doesn't have to stop, that perhaps does go for a touchdown.
Well, that was our reaction. We saw that live, but I watched the game again because I watched the first time at a Buffalo Wild Wings of all places, so I didn't hear all the breakdown of it. And I actually thought it wasn't as bad as I first saw it. I thought, you know, he may have slowed down a little bit, but it was actually a pretty good pass. And I thought the guy was on him pretty quick. I think there's some truth to that, but I don't think it was as bad as I had thought. I was surprised that on his Hail Mary, he couldn't reach the end zone.
Yeah, that was a real surprise to me too. And you saw him afterwards; he made a sign like the ball was fluttering, which is why it didn't, you know, get into the end zone. But I guess I'm looking for things. He is 35. He'll be 36 in December, and even at 35 and 36, there is a decline. It's not as rapid as you are when you get to say, 60. You know, where,
why would you say that?
Things, I'm just picking a number.
Random.
Okay?
Yeah.
I'm just picking a number. There's a lot more decline, you know, later on. I mean, you've got to graph it, but there still is decline. And Rodgers' footwork is not great, so maybe he has to do more fundamental things correctly in order to throw a Hail Mary like he did a few years ago, high enough to get it into the end zone. I don't think that's easy to throw it that high and to get it in that 10-yard section of end zone. And this one was, quite frankly, it was bad. It was 2 yards short. And what that's going to mean is it's not going to be a touchdown.
Yeah. Yep.
And you know how much of that's decline, or how much, you know, he didn't get his grip on it, or his feet were wrong and it was fluttered. I don't know what it was, but I'm just starting to look at those things more now with him because of his age, and wondering, you know, where we'll see the erosion of those incredible skills.
Yeah. Well, if he can't throw as far and as fast, then dink and dunk down the field. Plus, I do think he can throw a 30-yard pass pretty well still. So I think he's still far away from being ineffective. If he can't throw that far, then let's start throwing some shorter passes and do what Tom Brady does. Do what the Patriots do. Isn't that what we said before? Do the Patriots? It's
I think that's right. They haven't had a murderer on this team in quite some time, and I think that's what the Packers need to start doing. You know, getting guys that will just slit the throats of other people. That's that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And finally, Chris said that, and this is brutal. The defense was sound except for Tremont. He had 3 penalties. Green Bay can't cut him now, though. I think the CBA guarantees vested vets their salary. Okay, Chris. The reason they're not going to cut Tremont Williams is that he's still a pretty good player, and you don't have options behind. It's not because of the money. It's not because they would have to pay him. It's because he's still effective. And that play where he pushes the guy out of bounds, that's why they have him there. He's a locker room guy. He's kind of a coach on the field. Assignment sure. As I recall, he doesn't get hurt either. He's really solid that way. There's a lot of reasons why you want Tremont Williams on this team despite the 3 penalties.
Well, I didn't appreciate his locker room material that he gave the Bears by saying, we just wanted Trubisky to play to be a quarterback. We knew we'd win. I get what he was probably trying to say. Maybe have him stay in the pocket, don't have him run. But the way he phrased it, you know, that's nothing but, you know, going to be bulletin board material for next time we play him, although it'll be in Lambeau. So he should know better. Why would you give teams, you know, ammo to come after you? But
well, you know, but that worked pretty well for, you know, Charles Woodson. And, you know, I thought that what he was doing there was simply saying that, yeah, we want him to play quarterback. We don't want them to run the ball. We want to make him make plays. And they don't think he can make plays. And I thought the way he went about it was fine. It was a ballsy statement. It would have been better, say, after the second time they played them this season,
yeah,
when you have to face them again, and maybe after they had, you know, put together, you know, out of 12 games that they had put together, you know, 9 really solid performances, you know. So it may have been a little premature that way. But, you know, veteran leadership, that's what they got from Woodson, and maybe, you know, and Tremont play with Woodson, and maybe that rubbed off.
Yeah, maybe he felt there's swagger. You need to talk and then back it up. I don't know. But
yeah,
I first saw it, I thought, oh, geez, can't you just keep your mouth shut and go to the next game?
Yeah, it's going to be out there. It's what the NFL does. It's what the NFL players do. It's just kind of that thing, you know?
Yeah.
So we got also Tom from Germany, who was actually bringing his family over for a preseason game. I think it was the Kansas City game, and brought the kids and the wife over from Germany and watched the Packers play. Sent us a really nice photograph of the family together in their Packer gear. So thank you for that, Tom. We definitely appreciate that. We're glad that you came to Wisconsin and had a really good time. He also says he was delighted the Packers' performance against the Bears. He says he didn't feel like they stole one at Soldier Field, but that they just played a solid game. I'm used to seeing the defense give up big plays and lose games, and this time it was different. They won a game on defense. How refreshing. Indeed, I would have to agree with you on that, Tom. And also, thank you for sending that wonderful picture of you and your family enjoying a game at Lambeau Field. And we're also – have you seen these emails we're getting from a – I think it's a member of the academic community. Professor Sinek has been in touch with us. He is interested in Nick Searle's job.
Yep.
And, it's a highly coveted position.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
Well, but once you get on the inside, once you become, you know, the team physician, when you become the team chaplain, when you are the chief technology officer, you know, when you're in charge of running the sports book at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino, the way Mitt Miller is, I mean, these are coveted positions and there's very few of them. So I understand, you know, why Professor Sinek has written to us, and he is so very interested. I had to turn him down, though, because right now that position is filled. Our chief technology position is filled. But there may come a time where we branch out a little bit. You know, we may have Packers Therapy University at some time. I don't want to, you know, ever put the plug in that completely. We're going to have to retire before long, and we're going to need the money. Yes, this will be a for-profit university, I can assure you of that. But right now, Professor, I'm terribly sorry that we do not have that position at PT Audio Creations Limited available. Hang in there. If Nick suffers an aneurysm, say, or if he, you know, runs off with a sack of money to Mexico, and we need a new chief technology officer, we have your resume on file, sir. So thank you very much, Professor Sinek. And by the way, Professor, if you're in touch with us again, please let us know what academic credentials you have and what institution you are affiliated with, so we can give you proper recognition. All right. So let's see, what else do we have here? I guess we might have one more.
I know Pastor Kevin emailed us this week.
Oh, Pastor! Well, also Rob, too.
Yep.
Rob Gardner was also in touch with us. So let's. Did he? I should have read this before the. Oh yes. Okay. So this is a wonderful. Our friend Rob is from the UK, and he says, "Firstly," which is a very British way of saying first. It's great you're back. Probably one of the first Packer podcasts I started to listen to, especially when I was trying to connect with the Packer fans out there. He's been a fan since Dorsey Levens was playing. So that goes back to the 90s. He's part of the UK and Irish Packer fan club, and they're flying over the pond. Spoiler alert, Rob, it's substantially larger than a pond. It's an ocean, and it's very large. And it'll take you like 6 hours to get across. So, you know, or at least three to get across the water and six to get to the Midwest. But he's coming for the Raiders game. And he would like one of the two of us to kind of join up with them when they're over. And I said we'd have to, you know, check the calendars and things like that. But we do appreciate the offer to come and meet some UK and Irish Packer fans. Thank you for letting us know that you know, you're going to be over here and doing that. And thank you especially, Rob, for being a longtime listener and a correspondent. And we appreciate that very much, sir. So thank you. And then you mentioned Pastor Kevin, who responded to us regarding the article that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks from The Atlantic. And the article being Your Professional Peak Comes Sooner Than You Imagine. And Kevin wrote to us, the Reverend, the chaplain of Packers Therapy, wrote to us and, you know, kind of related some of his personal and professional experiences in the context of that article. And it was very enlightening, very candid. And thank you for that, Kevin. We appreciate it. And it actually kind of, you know, got us thinking more, too, about what it is we do for a living. And Dave and I each had a milestone birthday this past few weeks. And, you know, as you do pass those milestones, you begin to look and see where you've been and where you're headed from here. And if you haven't read the article, if you're a professional listening to this, I think it's especially true for professionals, but for anybody, look it up. It's Atlantic.com, and Your Professional Peak Comes Sooner Than You Think, I think is what it's titled. So check it out, and it'll give you a little bit of perspective about the seasons of professional life, shall we say. So that's what we have, and the whole bunch of, you know, people on Twitter too. So thank you. You know, we got TJ Pete hitting us, and of course Nick was corresponding with us on Twitter, and Dan Hicks was there. Elon Fellows, a lot of people joining us on Twitter this week. It's at Packers Therapy. Got 1,300 followers, I guess, so that's pretty good. And yeah, we'd love to have more if you want to get in touch with us. That is really the best place to do so. You can always send us an email, but having a direct tweet or an at tweet at Packers Therapy is probably the very best way to correspond with Chris and Dave.
Betting lines?
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
We'll talk about the winners first, right?
Well, we'll talk about the winners first. First of all, we made five bets last week on mybookie.com. We won one and lost four. So
That's not good.
No,
that's not good.
I think that's only slightly better than the last time I took your bets for the Brewers. So yeah. The commonality here is your picks. But yeah. Let's see if we can make that back up. But let's go through the betting lines that we had last week. Number one, we asked what would be the total points, the game, the over-under for the total points. The total points was 47. We both took the under, and the under was correct. And as I was watching the game, I thought, man, I should have put a lot of money on the under. The under really felt like the right call. Mm-hmm, and, man, it's it crushed that one. But so that was the one bet that we got correct on, and I won my $10 back. Number two, total rushing yards for Aaron Jones. You set the line at 80, and he had
not 80.
Not 80. Yeah, I thought I know what he said. It was not 80. Let's just say it's not 80. I thought Mike puts the numbers down. It probably does somewhere.
When you do his evaluation, do we have to say that it was 39 yards and 13 carries, Mike?
Yeah, I thought he had it on there. I don't know where I'm missing it. Anyway,
put it on there, Mike.
It's not 80, and he can tell me where I'm missing it later. So anyway, so the under was that one. Number three, the number of touchdowns by Devontae Adams. You set the line at 1.5, and that was 0, unfortunately.
No.
This one is interesting. Who would have more pass completions, Aaron Rodgers or Mitch Trubisky? And you said Trubisky. I said Rodgers. It was Trubisky. I think by quite a bit, right? Do you have that?
Yeah, it was 26-18.
Yeah, so pretty darn good there. Number five, I actually don't like this line, but I won't do this one like this anymore. But we asked the question, could Tariq Cohen have more than 7 carries, more than 25 rushing yards, and a touchdown? We both said yes. And, you know, it is interesting. He had a very quiet game where he's really burned us in the past and, mm-hmm. and burned lots of teams. So I think the fact that, you know, he's such a quick, squirrely guy to tackle and we have a quick defense and we're able to neutralize him, I think that's pretty telling.
Well, he had, you know, they got him, quote, in space, right? You know, so he had 8 catches, led him in receptions for 49 yards. But the guys, they have a new plaything in the backfield, right, that they wanted to get the ball in the hands of their draft pick. So that's the kind of the way they went. But they only ran the ball 15 times. Well, 3 of those was by Trubisky, so 12 times by running backs. This was not a run game like we're going to see against the Vikings. So the fact that Cohen was, you know, used in the passing game, that, you know, that's, I think, maybe what they're going to try to do with this year is to get him the ball in ways that aren't running.
Yep. Anyway, the answer was no, he didn't have a very good game. So the no had that one. Number 6, we asked the question, will Rodgers have 2 or more touchdowns and Green Bay will win and the total score will be more than 47? We both said no on that. There's a few people that had said yes, but I don't. Again, that's a very specific bet that that we didn't like, and that was true. Number 7, first play from scrimmage on offense. I was anticipating that we were going to get a pass, and it was a run to Aaron Jones. I think most people said it was going to be a run play, and Chris, you were one of them. I thought it was going to be a pass to Adams, so it was a run to start. 7.5, who would have the first penalty on the Packers? Do you recall who had the first penalty?
You know, I don't.
It was Kenny Clark.
Oh.
I think it must have been that holding.
Oh,
that bogus holding call that he had?
Yeah. I always think, you know, defensive holding along the line. I mean, they're always being held.
Yeah.
I mean, they're being held by the offense, so they hold the offense back. These guys are kind of dancing around. I mean, that's just how that goes. I mean, I thought that was cheap. I always hate those calls of holding when it involves a defensive lineman. I think those are weak.
And the tiebreaker, which was needed, how many passing yards for Aaron Rodgers? You said 245. I said 262. It was 203, and I don't think anyone guessed that low. I think 211 might have been the lowest guess. So the winning number is 6 correct, and it is Tom in Germany with 6 points. Sends us a picture, and he wins the betting line. So he's got to come back now to the United States to go to Vegas to be able to spend his week at the hotel and casino. So
he needs to bring the Fraulein along with him.
Yeah, but not the kids. No.
This is not. A lot of these Vegas places have gone to family friendly. Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino is not one of those places.
Right.
All right. This is the kind of thing where you bring your wife, you bring your girlfriend, you bring them both, you know, that kind of thing. And it's best really if you wore a disguise of some kind, because you don't want to be seen coming in and out of the facility. So I just think it's far better if you do it that way. I don't know if you're going to have to, you know, rob a small convenience store in Germany, Tom, in order to be able to get the funds to do this. But I think you need to do it. It is a lovely facility. Last year we tried to get people back in the Vegas location. I think that we tried. Having a little problem with the health department, nothing to worry about. So I think we're going to have to go back to the Laughlin location this year. I think you'll like it a little bit less congested. So the Laughlin facility will be open for you. But again, as always, latex is the way to go when visiting the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. So congratulations, Tom.
Just to let you know, Jared Stevenson, Jeff Tum, Richard Drain, and Jared Van Cleve all had six as well, but they lost out on the tiebreaker. But congrats to all of you. I only had four right, so shows how much I know. That's why I'm losing money quickly on mybookie.com. Are you ready for this week's?
Oh, I've been waiting for this. I just wanted to get through that first crap in the podcast so we could get to this.
Yes.
This is why I came right here.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Well, we want to know what you think here. All right, that's number one. I'm going to stick with this one, I think, is number one because it's an easy one to bet. Total points with the Packers and the Vikings.
Vikings put up 28 this past week. Is that right? I think that's what it was. Yeah, Packers, of course, 10. So the question becomes, Vikings will be playing on the road, be playing at Lambeau. The Packers will have this be the second week now playing. It's a good defense. You know, I kind of think that the line from last week, the 47, that might not be a bad line for this game. I think I'm going to go with 47.
Okay. The line is actually 44, but I'm going to take the over, even though you've set it higher than what online says. I'm going to take the over of 47. I think the Packers are going to certainly score more than they did. I think Minnesota's got at least a touchdown and maybe a couple field goals in them. So I think we can get to 47 and higher.
Well, I can certainly see a 28-20 type game with Vikings winning, that kind of thing.
No, well, all right. Number two, how many sacks for Green Bay? How many will they? Will the Green Bay defense have?
Well, they had five this past week, but that's Mitch Trubisky. And if Minnesota is going to be a predominantly running team, they're not going to have as many dropbacks. I'd be shocked if they had, under 20 again. I mean, they had 10 this past week. So I think the number of sacks is going to be reduced from last week just because they're not going to be dropping back 45 times. I'd be really surprised if they did that. Now, Packers, I think they have everyone healthy. I heard nothing coming out of camp so far saying that they have anybody hurt, and we're doing this on a Tuesday night, so they should be full strength. I'm going to project maybe 20 dropbacks, and therefore I'm going to set the number of sacks at 2.5.
2.5. Oh, I think you're going to lower than that. I'm going to take the over that. I think Minnesota's offensive line is not good, and we get a lead, and we could have another big sack day. So that's until they prove me wrong, I'm going to take the over. Number three, total completions by Aaron Rodgers. Now, and the reason I have that, I do have the line from mybookie.com, and I just wonder if he will do more dinking dunking down the field. So I'm curious how many completions you think he'll have.
Well, this week, 18 of 30. Which you can reduce that down to 60%, I guess is what that comes out to. Wouldn't surprise me to see that be a baseline for him going forward. 30 attempts again this week wouldn't really surprise me. So I'm going to set the line. I'm going to set it at 19.5.
Wow, that's. I'm going to take the over on that one too. The line is 25.5.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
So it's quite a bit higher. But you've done this for a long time, Chris. So don't be intimidated by the bookies here. Number four, how many receptions by Jimmy Graham?
Okay, Graham with three this past week, one for a touchdown. I am thinking that he's going to be a regular part of this offense. I would not be surprised to see three more, but I'm going to shade that high. I'm going to go 3.5.
3.5 is right on the bookies, but I'm going to take the under.
All right.
Take the under there. Number five, how many rushing yards for Dalvin Cook?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Now, this is a good player. Cook is a good player, and the Packers are going to have to pursue and gang tackle the way they did against Chicago. But I think Cook is a better runner than anybody that they have on the Bears. So we want to know not number of carries, you want to know number of yards.
Number of rushing yards, correct.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We need to take the receiving yards out of this. I have a hard time imagining him getting over 100 against the little bit that I saw of the Packers defense. But I think he will have a good day, and maybe a day like I thought Aaron Jones was going to have. So I'm going to set that line. I'm going to set the line at 85.
85. The line is 78. I'm going to take the under on that one. Number six. Who will have more reception yards? Not catches, but yards. Okay. Uh-huh. Adam Thielen or Davante Adams?
Ooh, boy, that's a good one. Thielen is one of those guys that, you know, I just don't want to believe in, but damn, he gets it done. You know, really does.
That's right.
Davante, he 8 targets, 4 catches last time, only 36 yards. I'm wondering if they're going to roll coverage in that direction and try to let somebody else, you know, the tight ends or MVS, beat them. So I'm thinking that Devontae's not going to get a lot of receptions, which means not a lot of yards. Adam Thielen against the former Packer defense would have, I mean, I have
Killed
no hesitation.
Him.
Oh, yeah. I have no hesitation, you know, seeing him get, 140 yards or something like that. Now, I think he will have more yards than Adams, but I don't know that he's going to have over 100. Necessarily. I think Adams will be maybe, you know, 60-ish, and I could see Thielen being, you know, 80-ish, something like that.
So you're going to pick Thielen?
Yep.
Thielen is your answer. I'll take Adams.
Okay. He's your close personal friend.
Yeah. Why would I ever not pick him?
Right.
Number seven, a yes or no, will Aaron Rodgers pass for more than 275 yards, and will Green Bay win? Will both those things happen?
No.
So you'll say no, and I am going to say yes.
I think both of those things will be no. It's not one no and one yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Then 7.5. What quarter or what point after kickoff? What quarter will they show the Clay Matthews sack from last year?
Ooh. That will be in the first quarter. Because he's not with them any longer, but they'll probably do some kind of highlight, you know, package to show, you know, that the game ended a tie, which is unusual in the NFL, and that would be kind of the key play that they would show. But I think they would do it early in the game.
Okay, but after kickoff, it's good. Right. I'll say second quarter. I think they'll kind of ease their way in and show it in the second quarter. And then the tiebreaker is. The tight end and running back total receiving yards. I this is kind of, again, trying to guess through if they're going to play an offense that's not all chucking down the field. You want to take a stab at total receiving yards by all the tight ends and running backs?
Okay, so it's receiving yards by those who are not wide receivers.
Correct.
So no Adams, no MVS.
Why don't we call it total receptions? Let's make that easier, because then...
Okay.
Let's do that. So number of catches.
Tight ends and running backs.
For Green Bay.
What they have this past time, it's going to be Jones with one, Davis, Tanyan, Lewis, and who else? Graham.
Wait, so they did had you say eight? Davis? Davis is not a – he's a wide receiver.
Oh, that's right. It's Trevor Davis. No, I was wrong. Okay. Yeah. 1, 2, 4 6, 9. Half of the receptions last time were by backs or tight ends. Yeah. You know, I think this offense favors those positions. Because I think this is largely a rhythm passing game.
Whoa. Timeout. Yeah. I'm only counting 6. What am I missing? Oh, Jimmy Graham. 9. Sorry.
Yep. Okay. Yep. So they split it 50-50, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that again. I do think there's going to be more completions. I think I set the line at 19.5, so that may be just enough to give the wide receivers the edge. I do think it's going to be close though, but I would put the favor on the wide receivers.
So what's your number? The total number of receptions.
Oh, I thought you just wanted to say which group would have more.
Oh, not even close to that. How many receptions total by Green Bay tight ends and running backs? So you had nine correct last. What do you think the number will be this week?
I think I'm going to go nine again.
Nine. Okay. I'm going to go with 11.
Yeah. I think they're going to have 11 catches by wide receivers and nine by backs for a total of 20.
All right. You got it. All right. So if you want to play along with Chris and I and mybookie.com and Mike Miller, who also plays, just email Mike your responses and you send that to his email at mitnomiller@gmail.com. That is MITNOMILLER
@gmail.com. Yeah.
We can never do that in sync. I don't know why we can't sync that up, but.
Well, we've still got, 16 weeks of the season to go, so. Yeah.
All right. We'll figure it out. So that's your betting lines for this week. I predict a Packer victory. And Chris does not. So
I do not. I think that they will play a competitive game. They will wind up losing. I will expect the offense to show more rhythm, to show improvement over what it did last week. Still a very good defense on the other side of the ball, so I don't think they're going to light anything up. I think their defense, the Packers' defense, will play solid, but I think that they don't have a good matchup here. I'm skeptical about the strength of the Packers running defense, and if Minnesota is made this conversion to being a team that favors the run against the pass, I think that's a good matchup for them, and that's why I see the Packers losing like a 28-20 type game.
Okay. I think they're opposite of that. I think it's not gonna be a 10-3 game. I think both sides might score a little bit more. But what if I were to tell you the Packers are going to win 28-6 or something, like where the defense again rises to the occasion? You're going to be super thrilled about the season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's a game like that, and especially if they kind of dominate that way, I'm going to have to start thinking that, maybe this is for real. I would start thinking it would be like, remember the 2007 season when they went 13-3 and they were coming off a 500 year the year before, and it took a really long time, but I think for both of us, to believe that, hey, they really are going to be this good, and they made it all the way to the NFC Championship game, a game they probably should have won, as it turns out. But the fact that they did as well as they did, and right up through the postseason, that was a surprise. I did not see that coming, and it took a while for me to believe that they were as good as they were. And this year may be the same deal, but a win like the one you're talking about, I think I could get with that.
All right. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. This is a good start. We had them both 0-1 now, so we're further ahead than we thought we would be, so that's really exciting.
Well, maybe at the bye we should take a look at that again and maybe make some corrections to our initial out of the box thinking on that.
Well, I was looking at my picks and thought, what should I adjust? And I was optimistic on the front end, but I did have this as a loss, so I'm ahead of the game here. Anyway,
so you want to do any pop culture before we wrap this thing up?
I have just my one pop culture is not something to watch or read or anything. It's actually something I did yesterday. Have you ever done shooting clays before?
No, I my son has done that. Nick has of course, living in Texas, I mean, you do that before breakfast. So I have seen it done. I've seen it done in slow motion, in fact, when he's been shooting. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I was up in Kohler and got a chance to do it, and a little nervous, I haven't really fired a rifle before. A lot of pellet guns, BB guns, kind of cans and stuff when we would go up north. But, this was a gun that, that kicks back pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So did that, and it was a ball. I really enjoyed doing it. I wasn't too bad. I was probably maybe 50%. I think early on I was maybe a two-thirds of the time I would hit, and then my shoulder started to hurt.
It was sore, yeah.
And I got a huge bruise on my right arm. And I switched to a gun they said had more kick to it, and oh, my gosh, it just really hurt. And so I think my percentage went down. But That's really a fun thing to do. If you ever get a chance to try something like that, that's shooting clays. I know that now there's the axe throwing bars. Have you
yes.
seen any of those things?
Yes.
I've not done that yet.
In fact, if you watch the Good Fight on CBS All Access, it's the successor show to
The Good Wife.
The Good Wife, right?
Yeah.
And so it's essentially the same show without a couple of the main actors in it. And that was this past year. That was a big subplot. She was getting frustrated, Christine Baranski, and she was frustrated. So at night, she would go to these axe throwing places. I hadn't heard of that before, but it's a real thing. And these custom made throwing axes, you know, it looked pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, I haven't done it yet, but there's a bunch of them in St. Louis, and I was going to do it one time and wasn't able to. But yeah, I think that'd be fun. But the shooting clays, it's not for the faint of heart. It's definitely you got to be able to hold that thing together pretty tight. And I think it didn't help that I shot probably, I think it's probably between 50 and 70 different times I shot. So it got sore after a while. But that's my pop culture recommendation for the week. Do you have one?
Yes, I do. And it's not one of the ones I watch over the summer, which I will probably dribble in during the season. But it's one that I was watching tonight, and it is a guilty pleasure. it's the new Mindy Kaling show. I think it's a Hulu show. She must have some kind of production deal with them because the Mindy show was on. And I liked her since I saw her in The Office. I thought she was funny as an actress. Then I found out she did a lot of the writing for the show, and that got me interested in her more holistic career. So when she got her own show, it was a mixed bag. Sometimes it could be very funny. Sometimes it was off the rails. But there was a lot going on, a lot of pop culture things. I liked what she was trying to accomplish. So now she has this new show, and it's loosely based on the Four Weddings and a Funeral movie. That was a Hugh Grant movie, Andy McDowell.
Yep.
It was 20 years ago, maybe. It was a long time ago. And she must have been a fan of it. So now she's got this production deal with Hulu, and there's a weekly show centered on different characters. Andy McDowell is in it as the mother of one of the main characters, which I thought was nice callback casting. And it's four Americans in London, getting established in their jobs, one working in politics, one works at the Goldman Sachs office in London, and one has some kind of a store for party goods and things like that. And it's I guess a little bit on the order of Friends, but in a different setting with different cultural things. The boyfriend of one of the characters is a Muslim. You got that going on, and there's a different vibe because it's not in New York City, it's in London. And it's kind of funny if you like the way she writes. If you've seen either her show or the shows she wrote for The Office, that have a lot of pop culture references in them, a lot of what I would call rapid fire misdirection kinds of things, where you think it's going to go one way and then the punchline's that it's something different than what it seemed to be setting up to do, but it's all done really 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 quickly. I like it, and it's not the kind of thing that I would say, yeah, if you got a choice between watching The Wire, The Americans, and Four Weddings and a Funeral, watch Four Weddings and a Funeral. No, it's not that kind of show at all. But it is the kind of show, if you want something light, something fun, something that you could be on your phone during it and still get the gist of the show and the appreciation for it. I would say check it out. It's fun, I guess you might say. It's not great TV, but it's fun.
All right. Well, I like to have fun.
This is what I understand about you. You're a fun guy, Dave.
Nothing. Did you call me a fun guy?
Well, no, you're not a mushroom, as far as we know.
Yeah. We're so funny.
I do know that you had fun, though, last Thursday. I do hope that you have good fun this weekend when the Packers are playing the Vikings. I'm entering with trepidation, you know, but I'm hoping that you are right and I am not, and that all Packer fans are going to be delighted by the outcome of what we see at Lambeau Field, in the season opener at Lambeau Field. So we're going to watch either way. Dave's going to watch from St. Louis, and I'm going to watch from central Wisconsin. And we'll be back to talk about it sometime early next week. I don't know if we'll have to wait as long as we did this time. I'll check work schedules and see when we're going to be available. So if you can be patient and wait until that time, you shall be rewarded with another episode.
A lot more of this.
Yeah, a lot more of this. So until then, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that is Packers Theory.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.